This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 101. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
So welcome to episode 101, the infamous 101. How's it going, Berners? Have you had a good week?
Yeah, I'm all crazy today. Crazy Berners, live on the podcast.
you're having a bit of a mental day.
Yeah, mental breakdown, mental life.
Well, you can relax for the next half an hour or so, because we've got some great cricket stuff coming up. We've got Pete Johnston, the Irish cricket analyst, and of course, we get to answering your cricket coaching questions. And by the way, the best cricket coaching question gets a prize that is a course on Pitch Vision Academy courses sections. So, Berners, as it's episode 101, I thought we could have a little Room 101 cricket-themed this week. So have you got anything that you'd like to put into your Room 101 that would make your Saturday afternoons playing a little bit easier?
Yeah, for sure. I often think about a few weird and wonderful things. I always thought as a little boy it would be great if you could issue like three of your players with a glove, particularly the ones that were really fat and couldn't catch. Can I say that? Is that kind of not politically correct these days? Or yeah, just so you could have some form of hope of them actually claiming a catch. Give them a ruddy great glove to get hold of the thing, and you could share that amongst fielders, but you could only ever have one or two on the field at any one time.
Well, that's interesting. Like a baseball mitt.
Yeah, something like that. Or someone else can wear keeping gloves, like your first slip. You know how in club cricket you have the guy who stands there at first slip every game? He can't catch, but he always stands there. It's like, you know, does that happen in any other sport where some guy can't actually do it, but you continue him in that position for the best part of 25 games? It's great.
Well, he can't run either, so I suppose it's the lesser of two evils, isn't it, when you've got the 75-year-old guy who's turning out for the third 11, and you've got to put him somewhere, haven't you? If you stick him at cover, then he's going to be in trouble, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what I'd do. I would definitely get rid of the half-hearted tee. Because there's nothing worse especially when you fielded first. You're playing an away game, and you walk into the tea room, and you're ready for your cup of tea, and you see in front of you the curled in the corner egg sandwiches, and a couple of fondant fancies, and two bags of crisp for the whole team.
I like to refer to that as the processed buffet. You know, straight out your Mr. Kipling packages. I want a bit of love. I want Mrs. Quartet at number 42 to be out there boiling those eggs early doors, getting some fresh jam from the local farm.
Yeah, it's always a good bet when someone's mum gets into it and they make their own cakes.
Exactly.
You can have a couple
of
slices.
Heart behind it.
So I definitely get rid of that. There's a council-run ground around here that a few teams, third and fourth teams, play on. It's one of these great big playing fields, and the tea room there is staffed by a gruff man who obviously doesn't want to do it. He hates his job, and you literally get given two sandwiches, a jam tart, and a bit of Battenberg cake, and one bag of crisps, and that's it.
That's all. You'd have more fun in London.
Exactly. So it's if you're ever playing down there, you bring your own tea. Because you're not getting anything from them.
Yeah, don't worry, I won't be coming.
I'm joined on the line now by Pete Johnston, the Irish analyst and assistant coach. He's joining me from Nagpur, where the preparations for the Irish team for the World Cup are continuing. You've played three warm-up matches, is that right?
Yeah, three warm-up matches, two in Dubai, which were on subcontinent-type wickets. And then we played the one big one here against New Zealand a couple of days ago, which went very well.
So what was the intent? What was the aim of those warm-up matches? What were you trying to get out of them?
Yeah, just trying to get match practice, I suppose. We had a camp in October or November in Pune, and that was mainly skills. We played a few games. We were mainly looking at getting that match practice and certain areas of our performance. We weren't really looking at getting results. So, in fact, we lost the two games in Dubai against New Zealand or against Zimbabwe and Kenya. Mm-hmm. But we took New Zealand close a couple of days ago, which was good and a step in the right direction.
And how would you review the performance then through that particular lens of not necessarily looking at the result of the match, but looking at those particular aspects that you were working on? How did that go?
Yeah, good. Like, we review every game. So if we just look at the New Zealand game that we just played, they got over 300 and we were 30 short in the end. But we were in the game right up until we took the batting power play. But certain areas we've been working on, particularly against the spinners, are starting to come right. And in the last game, we saw our scoring ball percentage up around 55%, which is very good when you've got the likes of Daniel Vettori bowling at you. Mm. On the bowling side, I don't think we've really clicked, perhaps bowling in partnerships, but certainly individuals have bowled well. But overall, it was a very good performance.
You mentioned scoring ball percentage there, which is something that maybe club players can look at as well, because that is the type of thing that the scorers record, you know, balls face and all the rest of it. So
yeah.
What type of standards are you looking for scoring ball percentages?
Yeah, well, I guess it comes down to singles as well. We got 112 singles against New Zealand the other day, which was actually more than they got. They got 111. Mm-hmm. So, you know, generally you're looking for 100 plus singles in an innings. I remember a few years ago we were looking for 90 plus, but we're probably trying to get 100 plus out here, I would have thought, in good conditions. And I guess it's just important to be rotating the strike, because pressure does come, you know, with consecutive dot balls, and it's very often the boundary shots will look after themselves as long as you can get off strike, and then that really would be one of the most important things for any cricketer, and particularly youngsters growing up. You know, some guys might have the power, but they've also got to have the skill to get off strike, which is extremely important. And from a team point of view, obviously rotating the strike is very beneficial.
Do you set targets for that percent? Do you say, right, we want, when, for an opening batsman, say, for example, you know, we want X percentage?
Yeah, we do set targets, but every game is different. It's about the guys adapting to the to the conditions. I mean, we've looked at that, and actually it was probably very pleasing the other night as well, because Paul Sterling and Porterfield, they had the big shots, but then they also had the soft hands and were able to get the singles too. And their scoring to dot ball percentage was 50-50, which is probably better than most openers, and that would be right at the top for opening batsmen, because obviously you're going to get more in boundaries, so you're going to have a higher boundary percentage. But that's excellent, and that's something we've looked at, where, you know, we compare it to the Indian openers who are currently actually doing that, you know, that 50-50 dot ball to scoring ball percentage, and that was very pleasing too. So it's just making the guys aware of sort of where they need to be, and then I guess just working on it in the nets technically. I guess the only thing with that is not to panic as well, because there will be times where you might have to face 3, 4, 5, even face out a maiden, but not panicking and giving it away, I think, is important too. So it's finding the balance, I guess, is important.
How much then, based on the information that you've got from these warm-up matches, how much then does your preparation change and adapt to that information? Or is it just really telling you what you already knew?
I think it changes, because, you know, in a review situation, we sit down and we look at it and we say, well, this is what happened in the batting power play. What were your thoughts? What are our thoughts if we're in this situation again? So there's a lot of good discussion that goes on. And then in training, I suppose it's about putting yourselves in those situations and dealing with them either better. And it's not always reviewing things that go badly, it's reviewing things that go well and reinforcing them and then working on them in training too. And then there's always little technical things here and there that guys might work on. But the majority of the time out here, it's about, playing to the best, playing to your strengths, really. And
I suppose this close to the start of a big tournament, you're not going to be trying to make any big technical changes, are you? It's more about your tactics,
exactly.
and getting the most out of your whatever you've got, rather than trying to change what you've got.
Absolutely, and if there are small things, I guess it's about just going back through the archives and finding, positive performances or even technical things. If a batter's head is falling over, show him, a couple of innings back or whatever where his head was good and his balance was good, just to reinforce that. So that's probably more so. Rather than introducing something new to a player, it would be more about, well, this is what you did in the past when you were playing well.
Yeah, and that's a good thing at any level, isn't it? That's why even at a lower level, when you probably haven't got access to video information, you can still think back to innings that you played well and remind yourself that you can play well even if you haven't got a DVD of all your innings.
Yeah, absolutely. Like those sort of positive thoughts, or even if you're taking your cricket seriously, having a training diary, just a few notes, how training went, what your goals for the next session are. And I think that can be important, and how you're feeling at the time. And then looking back on that, well, when I was playing well, I was doing X, Y, Z in my practice.
Mm-hmm.
And you may realize, oh, well, I've let that slip. And if you have that diary, you can refer back to it. And that's probably a good tip too.
You mentioned that bowling in partnerships was one area that you wanted to look at. How do you see that? When you say bowling in partnerships, what do you mean? And then how do you practice that?
Difficult to practice. Just guys being disciplined, more consistent, getting the right bowling changes or the right people bowling together. You can always look through the stats and see who bowls well together. But it's just working on consistency in training. Figuring out what slower balls work well out here, to different batters. Obviously you're going to try and bowl different areas and just consistency really, and just working on that in the nets.
I suppose the natural mentality of a bowler is to think about his own spell and not think about the guy at the other end or the rest of the team, because it's a very individual thing, isn't it, bowling? So I suppose, would you say that it's a matter of the mentality and thinking, well, I've got to take responsibility, because if I do my half, then the other guy has to do his half?
Yeah, exactly. And I think by and large, we're very good at that, sticking to game plans. There's not too many guys that will try something out of the ordinary to take wickets. They'll try and build pressure and bowl dot balls. Very important to build that pressure and not get too greedy, I guess, as a bowler and go looking for wickets.
Okay, so we're on the cusp of starting the World Cup. What are your hopes? What are your aspirations?
I really do believe that we're starting to peak. The batting against New Zealand was exceptional. Our focus has been on this tournament for a long time now, and I think that's in our advantage, because other teams have been playing a lot of cricket, had their minds on the Ashes or whatever it's been. But there's been a lot of cricket, a lot of injuries have crept into the top teams as well. And I think, we're peaking. We're just going to go there, play our best cricket and see what happens. And I think we should be more consistent. Personally, I'd be looking for far more consistent performances, say, than the last World Cup. Where we obviously had two great wins, a tie against Zimbabwe, but a few sort of low troughs as well, like we were well beaten by Australia and Sri Lanka. So I'd definitely be looking for more consistency, and if we do that, we give ourselves a chance. Obviously, we'd be hopeful of beating Holland, and then if we play with that sort of a high level of performance, we give ourselves a chance in every game against the big teams, and hopefully, you know, we can win one or two and get to the quarterfinals against the big teams.
Fantastic. Well, good luck, and we'll catch up again soon.
Okay. Good to talk to you, David. Thank you very much.
It's time now for the questions section of the show, and we've got a couple of budding superstars awaiting their magic answer. So, Berners, who's the first person with a problem this week?
I've got an email from Libin Thompson here. Bowls really well in the nets, gets loads of turn. Bowls a great line. He's a leg break bowler. When he goes out into the middle, it all falls to bits. So he's just asking about kind of technique and his mental approach, what changes between in the nets and in the live game.
Well, a lot of the time when especially with a leg spinner starts to get a little bit worried about getting smashed around, because naturally a leg spin is harder to bowl, so it takes longer to master. While you're learning your art, you can bowl some rubbish. So if a leg spinner starts to worry about that, his action does actually change. Two things happen. He tries to, instead of flicking the ball, giving the ball a big rip and flicking it out, he just moves his wrist around a little bit and starts to roll the ball out instead. And if you've got a ball or an orange or anything nearby, then pick it up, put it in your hand in a leg spin grip, and just imagine, just flick it from hand to hand, just rolling it, and you'll feel the difference between rolling it out of your hand and getting hardly any spin and giving a good old flick and a rip. And then the other problem that bowlers have is, because, again, they're worried about making sure they put the ball there, drop it on the spot, they tend to just slightly open up their action a little bit. And as soon as you open up your action, stop getting side on, it becomes a lot harder biomechanically to turn the ball. So again, if you're opening up your action, you're more likely to be throwing it down the leg side or wide down the offside, which is strange because that's exactly what you're trying to prevent. But by trying to prevent dropping it short, which is more commonly what a leg spinner does, you end up spraying it around because you've opened up your action, and then you can't turn the ball as much, so you're less effective. So what you need to do is concentrate on getting your action as repeatable as possible, and that means making sure you get side on and making sure you're not afraid to be giving the ball a rip even when you're in a match. And if you do that, if you're in a match and you give the ball a rip, then if you bowl short because you're trying to give the ball a rip, then, you know, that's not too bad. You expect that from a leg spinner who's still learning what he's doing. But if you're spraying it all around the place and you're not turning it, well, you might as well take up bowling seam up, because you haven't got the leg spinner mentality. You need the leg spinner mentality of spinning the ball as hard as you can and working out how to get that accurate. Spin ball first, get accurate second.
There you go.
What do you think, Berners? What's your advice? You bowl a bit of spin from time to time?
I'm a hero in the nets. He's a hero, that man. No, I just, you're often more relaxed in the nets, aren't you? Just run in and bowl. There's no kind of outcome-based results off the back of it. You don't get taken off. You just, batsmen love facing a spin bowler in the nets. Mm. If you can't hit a slow left armer in the nets, you can't hit anyone.
So how does that change when you're in the middle then? Do you find you tense up, or are you one of these guys who can stay relaxed under pressure?
I mean, I get the yip. I stopped bowling, I did, because I used to get the yips, and I used to bowl a lot of full tosses, and that was just basically the rhythm and not releasing the ball quite as it should be. But I guess it does. I think it's quite hard for a spinner. They need to get in their mode and start bowling how they should do straight away, pretty much, because you can get taken off pretty quickly, or the game can change very quickly if you don't quite get it right.
Captains are not very forgiving, are they, if they haven't got a lot of runs on the board and they see someone tossing it up and a batsman puts it out of the park, then the fear of the captain is to whip the guy off as quickly as possible.
Okay, we've got a question here from Solomon Youssef. or possibly that's Yusuf Salomon. He is asking and inquiring about increasing his bowling speed. A very frequent and lovable question. I'm sure you will answer this duly, coach.
Well, everyone loves to ask this question. How do I bowl faster? How do I become a 90 mile an hour bowler? Well, there are technical answers to this, and psychological answers, and fitness based answers, and we've given those a lot before. And if you go onto pitchvision.com and do a little search for the 10 immutable laws of fast bowling, then you'll find three very, very detailed articles on that. And you'll also see Ian Pond's How to Bowl Faster online training course, which is highly recommended for anybody who wants to up their pace. And anybody can up their pace. Even if you're the most feebly slow medium pacer, you can increase your bowling pace. So really what it boils down to is attitude. And whenever I get a question like this, I always wonder what the background is to somebody sending a question like that. I think a lot of people expect you to give a two sentence answer, and suddenly you can go from bowling at 50 miles an hour to 90 miles an hour. It doesn't really work like that. What it takes is you getting into the net and working really hard on your technique until you get it right down to perfection. And all of those things, that there isn't really an easy answer for those things. You can't say, right, all you need to do is adjust your wrist position by 2 degrees and you'll be bowling like Sean Tate. What it takes, the short answer is also the long answer, which is don't look for quick answers. Get in the nets and get working as hard as you can. Get as much information as you can and then work on it as hard as you can every day. If it's important, if it's really important to you, if it's something you really want to do and you're not just idly wondering if you want to be a bit of a quicker bowler, then you need to be doing something every day to get your pace up. But the good news is, on all that, is that you can do it. You just have to start. And you might have to get it wrong quite a lot, especially if you haven't got a coach, you haven't got someone directing you. You might have to experiment yourself, and you might have to do things wrong for a while. And that is one reason why Pitch Vision Academy is here. So you can look up things on Pitch Vision Academy and kind of avoid those problems in the first place. But at the end of it all, you still have to get into the nets and experiment. It doesn't matter how many tips I give you. It doesn't matter how much bucking up I tell you to do. What it really all boils down to is going into the nets.
So bit of spit, bit of heart, and off you go.
A lot of heart burners. You have to have the biggest ticker. If you really want to do it, you need to put everything into it and do it every day. As somebody said to me once, you're not a runner if you buy a running magazine and a nice pair of trainers. You're only a runner when you go running. And it's the same for cricket. It doesn't matter how good a cricket bat you've got, what fancy boots you've got. It's how much you go in the nets and practice.
All the gear, no idea.
As they say, all the gear, no idea. Yeah, well, you can have none of the gear and every idea, because you get every idea, people start giving you the gear.
About the no idea and loads of good gear, I'm quite a keen activist of that, actually.
Well, there's also the other saying, which is if you can't be a cricketer, you can at least look like one.
Yeah, I've got some great kit. My bat's an absolute belter.
Is it? Well, it can't be too bad if you got nearly 200 within one innings with it.
Yeah, there you go. That's the proof. That's the evidence, my lord.
So what do you think, Berners? Who, after I've spent the last few minutes abusing somebody, who do you think should win the prize this week of the Pitch Vision Academy online coaching course?
It's a tough one, but I think we've got to give it to Libin Thomas. Just the fact that he's a leg spin bowler, we've got to protect those guys a little bit, make them feel loved and wanted, and I think he's my winner this week.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, I'm with you, Berners. There's no greater sight on the cricket field than a leg spinner who has mastered his art and he's bamboozling some poor chap at the other end. So I love seeing that from the wicketkeeping position. I love seeing that from the crowd. So I'm right behind you on that. Oh, power to the leg spinners. I think we should introduce a policy of every team must have a leg spinner in it.
It's poetry in motion.
Once again, we are catching up with Lee Lowry on the phone. Lee is a club cricketer in Australia, and his season is drawing to a close. The finals are within sight. So what we're going to talk about this week is when you are coming to the end of your season, you've got a few weeks left and you don't quite know where you're going to get the energy from to get through those last few weeks. It's easy at the start of the season. You're excited, you're ready to go. But after a long campaign, sometimes you can get a bit jaded. So what are your thoughts as you stand with the few weeks left of the season? What are your thoughts to getting through the last few weeks?
Yeah, I suppose I've got a few points in mind. I'd probably say definitely the first one's playing finals. I mean, that's the reason we play Premier Cricket, other than trying to get to the next level, of course. I think playing finals is obviously the ultimate goal, and winning finals and winning premierships is what you want to do. So that's going to drive you along coming into the last couple of games or last few weeks of the season. And there's nothing better than playing the best when the pressure's on, and it's a true test of your skills. And probably point number two, I would probably say, would be, you know, your pride in the performance as well. Whether you've had a good or a more indifferent season, something that's pretty strong within the group is, just having that pride in finishing the season well. I mean, you work so hard during that pre-season, there's no reason to stop short 3-4 weeks away from the end of the year. And you're not only playing for the end of this season, but you'll be playing for next year as well. And your name and your pride's on the line. You can't be seen as a weak link at the side.
Do you find, I mean, it's an individual thing, but do you find it helps maybe backing off a little bit on the intensity of the training, just to sort of give your mind that rest that you need, especially if you're in form? Maybe you don't need quite so much practice. So how do you deal with it? Do you back off a little bit on the training, or do you just keep rolling with it?
Generally keep rolling with it. I know this past week, I suppose there's been peaks and troughs over the season, but this past sort of 3 or 4 weeks we've been pretty tough. We've been doing a lot of running, and I mean, before we even pad up or bowl the ball at training these last 2 weeks, we've been put through our paces running wise. So yeah, it's a tough time of the year, but it's something where, as I was saying, you want to be peaking and you still want to be making an impression for selectors and your teammates as well.
Have you ever had that feeling where you've just thought, oh god, enough is enough? Or do you always go back to that list of things that you gave earlier on when you're feeling that way?
No, there's not too many times where you go, I've had enough of this. It's, I don't know too many people talking to them at the club too that would be in that frame of mind. I mean, we're all playing district cricket for a reason, and we all want to improve and reach at that best level that you can.
I think it's possibly more of a problem over here of younger players getting a little bit jaded, because you can find yourself, if you've got a bit of talent, you can find yourself playing up to 4 or 5 times a week. You know, you might be playing for your school, you're playing for your club junior section, you're playing for the men's section on an afternoon, and you're playing rep level as well. So so you do see young players who just, they love playing cricket, and they do well when they play. But sometimes it's like anything, you know, it's like eating chocolate, isn't it? You know, you like eating chocolate's nice, but if you ate 5 massive bars, you'd feel sick at the end of it.
they're just sort of breezing through and just, you know, turning up playing. They might be doing all right, but not really committed, like you were saying, say whether it's the start of the season or, you know, mid-year possibly.
I do think it's important as well to review as you go along, you know, review what you want to do as you go along, because say you set yourself a target at the start of the season of scoring, I don't know, 500 runs, and you get to five, and you do brilliantly at the start of the season, and you get to 500 runs, and there's still 3 games left at the end of the season, then, you know, that's a really good time to say to yourself, okay, I've achieved my goal that I wanted to do at the start of the season. What's my new goal? What am I going to try and get before the end of the season? You know, am I going to score an extra, 150 runs in those last three games? You know, maybe that's a big ask, but, you know, maybe I'll score an extra 100 runs in those last three games because my side are in with a chance of winning the title. So I think it's important to sit down and think about your goals, not only your runs and wickets goals, but also your goals in terms of your fitness training and your nutrition and your mental skills as well. You know, all those elements all fit together. And at a crucial time when you're starting to get a little bit jaded, and everyone gets that feeling now and again where you just think, you know, it's just today maybe is not the day that I want to play cricket. That happens to everybody. Then, you know, if you can keep yourself motivated by keeping your targets up to date, then you're going to get through that little lull, and then you're going to find yourself, you know, hitting runs and thinking to yourself, God, what was I worried about? I'm out in the middle, the sun's shining and I'm enjoying myself. What was I thinking?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it sort of it read my mind. It was probably my next point was reaching your goals, yeah, your season goals. And like you said, if you get to that 500 run mark, I know for me, thinking as a batsman, if you got to that mark, yeah, you'd definitely be reassessing. And I know growing up, the senior guys that would ever have something to say about the batting side, if you're in form and making runs, is that they'd make sure that you really make the most of it as well, like at the time, because you know, it only takes one or two good balls and all of a sudden you've got a bad run going. So yeah, definitely you have to reassess at that time and then try and smash those goals, because come next year perhaps things might be different. You might go through a poor patch and then things to what you expect. So if you are having a poor season, well then get some respectability out of it too. Yeah, really try and boost those numbers as much as you can, and that leads into the last point with improving the game, like seeing the improvements that you've been using and working on throughout the year. So we've been working hard at training and the results are starting to pay off. Your skill sets are improving, whether it's your shot range is getting greater or your range deliveries are getting wider and wider. I know working with a couple of younger bowlers in my side, they would be, because we've been playing a lot of short format game, the 2020 type stuff, and that 25 over cricket, we tend to obviously use a lot more changes of pace, and a couple of the bowlers were changing their pace, but only possibly, 5K maximum. So what we're trying to do is work with them to really get that change a lot greater, say whether a 7 to 12 sort of 15K difference in their slower ball. So yeah, the improvements in your game can even be still made in that last area of the season, and whether it's your ability to pick up and throw under pressure in the field, just something little. You're always working on something as that season goes by and seeing the results, and that leads you in good stead for next year, because then you can start working on something else and you've already got a base built up for this year.
So that's the end of the show. We've learned a lot, and hopefully you can take some ideas away with you and get into the nets, as I've been saying, and make a bit of a difference to your game by putting in those hours of practice. Remember, it takes 10,000 hours to master anything. So I don't know how close you are if you're listening to those 10,000 hours, but make sure it's another hour closer by the end of the day or by the end of tomorrow. Remember, you can contact us with your cricket coaching questions, and the best question does win a prize of a Pitch Vision Academy coaching course from pitchvision.com. And there's several ways you can get in touch with us. You can contact us via Twitter at PV Cricket Coach. You can email us, and you can also contact us via phone. And you've got the details there, haven't you, Bernice?
Yeah, you can drop us an email at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com or drop us a line on 0208 8167 691.
Don't forget that phone number is an answer phone, so you can contact us anytime, 24 hours a day. Doesn't matter where you are in the world. Just give us a ring and we'll pick up your message in the morning when we wake up. So until episode 102, that's all we've got time for. And we'll see you next time.
Cheerio.